It's a lot of attention, but most of their offenses involve misdemeanors. Recent statistics indicate that the number of juveniles behind bars has dropped some 25% in the last decade. States are trying different approaches to incarceration because it's expensive and can actually increase the risk for more criminal behavior. One approach that's showing promise is youth or teen court. There are programs in schools for disciplinary problems and in the juvenile justice system to deal with first-time nonviolent offenders, and it's our topic for today's Radio Times. We have two guests who have joined us. Here in our Philadelphia studios is Greg Volz. He's a public interest lawyer. He's also a Stoneley Center Foundation fellow who works with teenagers and children in Chester, Pennsylvania to develop and operate school-based youth courts. He's also working on developing a statewide youth court movement. And Greg Volz, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
We're happy to have you here. And on the telephone is Jeffrey Butts. He's director of the Research and Evaluation Center at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. That's at the City University of New York. And his work focuses on research and evaluation projects designed to discover and improve policies and programs for at-risk and disconnected youth. And Jeffrey Butts, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning, Marty. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Jeff.
Everybody knows everybody now. Jeffrey, let me begin with you, and I know this is not a new idea, but how long have youth courts been around?
Well, it depends on how you define it. The first traces I could find actually came during my systematic research project and resulted from me telling my father about it at the time, and he told me, hey, I did something like that in high school in 1947.
So it's been around 50 years, you think?
The concept has been around, of course, much longer than that, that young people listen to young people more than they do adults. But a formalized process where kids who have violated the law are brought into a pseudo courtroom where they are confronted with peer response or peer approval or disapproval goes back that far. A formalized court process, though, most people trace it to sometime in the 1970s.
Well, let me turn to you, Greg Volz. You've been working in Chester, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, developing courts in the schools in that particular city. What is your interest in youth court?
I think that youth courts are a preferred disciplinary system for as an alternative to zero tolerance. Post-Columbine, a lot of schools took it, and school districts and departments of education across the country took a tough line on violence, and of course none of us want to see violence in the schools, but that filtered down to start dealing with rather mundane, the typical kinds of things that kids do, and all of a sudden they're suspended, and that's not a good message to send. So I see it is first and foremost a disciplinary system, but I believe it's also an incredible educational tool for young people.
For people on both sides of the so-called courtroom?
Yes, the respondent who's the student offender as well as the students who are actually running the court. I think there's incredible educational socialization and civic engagement benefits that accrue by just participating.
And what are the kinds of offenses that teen courts in Chester have been dealing with?
In Chester, we're still feeling our way with the administration. Anything new, you have to get a buy-in, and it's rather low-level disciplinary problems, truancy, class disruption, hall walking, which is not being in where you're supposed to be. There's a lot of cell phone violations, talking back or profanity to a teacher, that kind of thing.
Jeffrey, let me turn to you and help us understand the court-based teen courts, or excuse me, the juvenile justice system-based teen courts.
Well, typically they result from an agreement between the police department, the prosecutors, whoever it is who's responsible for the first contact with a young person who's been arrested. And those people get together and decide to identify a particular set of offenses or charges that would be eligible to be diverted to the youth court or teen court instead of moving into the regular process. And those are, as Greg was saying, typically minor offenses, but in the justice system they could include things like minor property offenses, curfew violations, even in some jurisdictions as they grow more confident of their youth courts. I've seen places that are taking low-level drug offenses like marijuana possession and alcohol possession into the youth court process.
And how many of those kinds of courts are there in this country?
It's varying and a constantly moving target. I think a safe number to quote would be there's somewhere between 800 and 1,200 youth courts operating at any one time.
And what is the kind of training that a member of a youth court would go through?
Well, this is highly varying, and to me it's one of the key components of quality, how prepared the young people are to take responsibility in such an environment. I visited one program, which I will not name, which literally drove a van to the high schools in the afternoon and asked for volunteers. And when the van was full, they drove out to the courthouse and gave the young people about a 15-minute lecture on law, and then they were a jury.
Wow.
That was a bad program.
Yes.
The more developed programs, I would point to Anchorage, Alaska, that has a youth bar association with a bar exam that young people take to advance through the ranks from being bailiffs and clerks to being attorneys and judges. And they get extensive training, repeated training. They have moot court and mock trials. It can become quite elaborate.
And how about for schools?
Yeah, my experience, and this is based not only on what we actually do, but what we've studied in other jurisdictions around the country, I think you need 15 to 20 50-minute, 45-minute sessions with students, and with maybe the first third of that being just basic familiarity with why do we have rules,
right?
And are there consequences that flow, and what are those consequences that can flow from bad decisions? And once you get past the underpinnings, the legal foundation of it, actually more anthropological and cultural expectations of human beings, then we have 8, 10, 12 of what does a bailiff do, what does a judge do. A lot of courts use prosecuting and defense attorneys. We don't. We just have a youth advocate.
Mm-hmm.
But you have special training for that. You teach the students how to make an opening statement and closing argument, and then you run some mock trials. You do 3, 4, 5 practice ones before you do a real one.
And to you, Jeffrey, in terms of a verdict, I'm not sure if that's the correct language or not, are teen courts, are they? Do they mete out tough punishment?
Well, it depends on what you mean by tough. If by something that's consistent and young people respect and follow through on and it makes a difference in their lives, I think they can be tough. If you're looking for something that's painful, punishing, often not. The typical dispositions would include such things as writing an apology letter to the store from which you stole the goods you shoplifted, doing community service, serving on a jury. That's, I think, one of the most productive things is to have the participant in the original case come back and serve on a jury in a future case. That helps bind them to the whole concept of law as being part of our community and how we govern each other's behavior.
Is it important to think of terms, and I'm looking at you, Greg, about restitution? Is that sort of at the heart of what we're talking about here?
Well, I think it is about restitution, but we employ restorative justice. We believe that the purpose of the youth court is not to punish the offending student. It is to repair the harm that has been done, whether that was to property, whether that was to another person, whether it was the offending person themselves. There's a lot of brain research now that suggests that the adolescent brain is not fully mature, and bad decisions are made by somebody 15 that maybe might not be made when they're 25 or 30. So we think you should be a little more discerning and less punitive. And we've even got jurors who have actually said to the respondent, and I love it when I'm watching and they do this, they say, "We're not here to punish you. We're here to help you."
And by repairing the harm, I mean, it does personalize the offense, does it not?
It does. It does. Mrs. Jones started crying when you called her a whatever it was. You need to write her a thoughtful letter of apology. And by the way, we now require written letters of apology, not an oral letter. Mm. Not only do we know that it actually happened, but it requires reflection on the part of the respondent as to why am I apologizing to this adult? What is it that I really did? And we find that they start to get it about what their behavior did to another person.
Jeffrey, do you want to add to that? Because it's interesting to think about, and I think oftentimes kids don't have the opportunity to apologize for something to make things right.
Yeah, it's really just an extension of good parenting. When your 5-year-old take something from the neighbors, you don't just scold the 5-year-old and lecture them how stealing is wrong. You take them over to the neighbors and you ask them to apologize and give it back. And I think that's often a very instructive experience for small children. And as Greg said, we now know from brain research that the human brain and the ability to make judgments is developing well into the 20s. That's different than processing information. A young person is able to process information analytically in an adult way by the time they're 14 or 15 years old, but that's very different from judgment, and that doesn't really fully develop until 25.
Jeffrey, I know that you've looked at some of these programs across the country. Is it fair to say that they work, and by that I mean that the offender does not offend again?
Yes, I'm asked this question all the time.
I figured.
Greg knows because he and I have had many conversations about this. My first answer is it's possible to do youth courts badly, and I think a badly designed and badly run program probably does not have an effect. But when they're done correctly and powerfully, I really believe in the model, and the research I did for the Department of Justice showed that when a youth court is run properly, it can cut the rate of recidivism, I would say safely by 30-40%, and in a strong program, probably more than 50%.
But would it be fair to say, if we're talking about, you know, nonviolent offenses and first-time offenders, that there's probably a good chance they weren't going to offend again anyway?
Well, that's the research trick, and you have to control for that factor when you're doing research. You can't just say our youth court has a rate of rearrest of X percent and point to that as proof. You have to say these kind of young people, given these kind of backgrounds and experiences, would ordinarily be expected to have a rearrest rate of X, and ours is somewhat less than X, and that's how you do research on these programs.
And how about the program in Chester?
Well, I would just like to throw something out that's more general, but I think Jeff might want to speak to it because I'm sure he's heard this. Jeff's been actually in the field much longer than I have, but there's a statistic that gets thrown around. I don't know what the source is what the source is, but we found that it seems to be reflected in Chester. The statistic they throw at you, people who like youth courts, is that 25% of the student offenders, when they're done with their disposition, we don't call it a penalty, when they're done with their disposition, they volunteer to be in the youth court, which we think is an incredible endorsement that there's something going on here that is very attractive to these young people. Now, I cannot give you chapter and book as to where this is at, but I can tell you that some of our strongest youth court students in Chester started out as they were referred there because they had done something wrong, and they liked the idea. They thought youth court was fairer than what was happening to them.
Well, let's take a very short break, and we have much more to talk about. We are talking about youth courts, a jury of their peers, and that's Greg Voltz. He's a public interest lawyer and also a Stoneleigh Center Foundation Fellow. He's been working with students in Chester, just outside of Philadelphia, to develop and operate school-based youth courts, and he's working to get a statewide movement going. On the telephone is Jeffrey Butts. He's a director of the Research and Evaluation Center at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice at the City University of New York, and we have a student waiting in the wings, and we have open lines at 1-888-477-9499. What do you think of youth courts? Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Chester County Hospital and Health System supports WHYY. A member of the Penn Cancer Network, the Chester County Hospital offers an integrated team of cancer care specialists who tailor treatment plans to meet specific individual needs. ChesterCountyHospital.org.
Every step you take in this race is a step toward a brighter future. A statement of support for a place where curious minds of all ages can discover, unlock mysteries, experience arts and culture. The Y12K Road Race, supporting WHYY. Challenge yourself physically and help us continue to provide educational, trustworthy, one-of-a-kind shows and services. Saturday, November 12th. Sign up and learn more at whyy.org/y12k.
Newsworks.org is your source for smart stories that keep you better informed, better connected, and better prepared. Our network of quality journalists is a step above the rest, and better coverage of important issues means you'll always be a step ahead. Newsworks is something different. News for people who ask more. News for people who care, by people who care. Get involved at newsworks.org. Newsworks is simply news that works. powered by WHYY and you.
Supporting WHYY, Trader Joe's, a neighborhood grocery store where shoppers will find a variety of pumpkin products like pumpkin spice coffee and pumpkin bread baking mix. Locations and more at TraderJoe's.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about youth courts, so whether they're in schools or courthouses or even in community centers, first-time nonviolent juvenile offenders and misbehaving students are judged by people their own age, and it looks like this kind of justice is having some positive effects, both keeping young people out of the justice system and out of trouble. And we are talking about youth courts with Greg Voltz and Jeffrey Butts, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Greg, I know you've been working in Chester for Chester Public Schools for a couple of years now, and you want to make this a statewide movement. Is there an impediment to this movement? Is there interest in instituting more youth courts across the state?
Well, actually, there is a lot of interest, and part of it was generated by the Kids for Cash scandal in Luzerne County, which a lot of people have heard of. In the aftermath of that, both the Senate and the House, the Pennsylvania Senate and House, held hearings, and two of my youth court students went to Harrisburg and testified about youth courts. And after that, I got a phone call from the Senate Judiciary Committee's legislative aide, and they asked if I would research youth court legislation around the country and propose a bill, which we have done. Mm. It has not been introduced yet, but it's been proposed. In addition,
and I have to say, I read some of the testimony of those students, and it was pretty moving stuff.
I always tell people, if you want to know about youth courts, just go and spend 10 minutes and watch those students. And the other thing that's happened, which is we're very pleased with, is that in May, the Pennsylvania Bar Association passed a youth court resolution calling for youth court expansion throughout the state, and that they were going to advocate for it themselves.
Jeffrey, let me go back to you, because as you said, there are good youth courts, and there are, sounds like, bad youth courts as well. I mean, does there need to be some kind of standards and regulations so that youth courts do what they promise to do?
Well, I don't know if, since these are usually volunteer programs, the people, if there are paid employees, they're paid very little and they work part-time. I don't think it would be helpful probably to create some rigid standard book that they had to meet up in order to stay in business. But I do think it's important for those of us who care about youth courts and work around them to articulate our versions of quality and to document success stories and let everyone know about that. And most of the people doing research on youth courts, and I would say there are probably half a dozen people in my field who write about this, try to pay attention to program components, so the elements of the youth court that matter. You can't just call something a youth court and expect to have an impact. You have to identify which pieces of it you believe are effective and then try to document that fact as you run your own program.
But do you think there are elements of youth court that could be applied to the larger juvenile justice system, even for more serious crimes?
Oh, yes. I'll give you one example.
Go ahead.
The Chicago Juvenile Probation Department has a group of young people that they organize on a regular basis to serve as ambassadors.
Yeah, we gotta pull you down, because clearly there's a phone problem there, and we will try to fix that. We are talking about youth court today, or youth courts, I should say, today on Radio Times, and we'll try to get Jeffrey Butts back on the line at 1-888-477-9499. Greg, you had talked about zero tolerance, and this is something that schools have instituted, I think haphazardly, but nonetheless have instituted over the last couple of years to deal with problems, disciplinary problems in schools. And it sounds like you're saying that in some instances, zero tolerance has created its own set of problems, and that these youth courts are a better way to deal with some of the problems that can crop up in a school.
Well, actually, I'm writing a paper now trying to make that,
is that, right?
That very case. And I've been researching what evidence-based research exists to prove that zero tolerance policies work. And it appears that largely, not only are they not helpful, they may actually create additional problems. Mm-hmm. One of the students who, if you went to our website and you saw him testify, He said that suspension, which is what happens with zero tolerance,
exactly,
is treated as a joke by the students. Now this is a Chester kid talking, so we're not saying this is every school district in Pennsylvania, but he said it's treated as a joke. And I've had discussions with him. He said, we get off school for a week. That's what we want. We don't want to go to school anyway, some of us. And I want to be careful here.
Of course.
But with some students, they're already in a really bad state. Then they do something wrong, and then they're told, you're kicked out of school. And their attitude is, thank God.
Mm.
Now, is that sending the kind of message to that student that we want? I don't think so, because we're supposed to be educating that student.
And through just to finish that, and then we'll get Jeffrey Butts back into the conversation, but then just to finish that, which is that the youth court, if it works right, connects the child to a school, to a process in the school. Do they feel as if they've been heard in a way? But they do have to, in a sense, apologize or make amends.
I think it's true that they feel that they've been heard. And I even had a person who's now a principal who observed youth court lean back in between a couple of hearings and said, this is really interesting. You really find out what happened. Now, imagine you're in a really tough school environment. You've had staff cutbacks. You've got a stack of referrals of kids that did wrong things. How much time do you have to go into what really happened? Probably not as much as we would like. But if you have a youth court and you have a panel of 6, 9, 11, 12 students, they will try to find out what really happened here.
Let me get Jeffrey. I'm hoping you're back on the line.
Yes.
Okay, that sounds very good. You were talking about looking at this youth court model and seeing if it can be applied to the larger juvenile justice system. Can you continue what you were saying earlier?
Sure. I think if you boil it all down, these programs operate through two principal mechanisms. One is peer-to-peer relationships. As every mother knows, you know, kids listen to their friends more than they do adults.
And I think fathers know that as well, just to be fair here. But go ahead,
yeah,
Jeffrey.
That's right. Even aunts and uncles know that.
Exactly.
The other mechanism is the formality and what you might call the theater effect of being in court. There's a reason why we have judges who wear robes and sit on benches and formal procedures. It's not because that's the only way to manage the legal process. It's because from centuries ago, we determined that the public and formal process of a courtroom makes an impression both on the participant, the person who's been accused of a crime, and everyone else. Mm. It demonstrates that we as a society don't want to accept certain behaviors and we will respond. So you can take those two principles to the regular justice system. The second one, obviously, is fully embedded in the justice system. The first one, the peer-to-peer relationship, can be, it already is done in a number of ways. The example I was going to give you is Chicago. It has a group of young people who either are or recently have been on juvenile probation, and they serve as the welcoming committee and orientation team for new probationers. So when you are put on juvenile probation in Chicago, you may end up meeting with two or three other teenagers who explain to you what probation is, what the judge just said, to penetrate all the legal jargon you get in the regular courtroom, mm-hmm. and to orient that person to how the rules work and to say to them, they're not playing around here. If you hang out with your friend Joe again, that's a violation of your probation conditions and you'll be in trouble, and they'll know. So they basically boil it down to simple terms and orient that person, and it breaks up that usual dynamic where a young person has to listen to the adults in the room and do what they're told.
And in a teen court, are they wearing robes to create that theater effect?
Some do, yes.
Absolutely, in Chester, and we think this is important, and thankfully the Pennsylvania Bar Association actually bought us some gavels. We think the robe and the gavel is part of the mystique and confirmation that this is serious, this is real, and the student, I think it benefits not only the respondent who understands this is serious, but the students who are running the court understand this is serious.
And that's Greg Voltz. He's a public interest lawyer, and he's also involved in establishing and developing and operating youth-based courts in Chester, just outside of Philadelphia, in their public school system. Jeffrey Butts is a director of the Research and Evaluation Center at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice at the City University of New York, and his work has been focusing on programs for at-risk youth. Joining us now is Maury Hitchcock, and he's a senior at the Science and Discovery High School in the Chester Upland School District, a leader of its youth court. And Maury Hitchcock, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. So how did you get interested in youth court?
Basically, I was approached the end of my sophomore year about youth court, and it's such an interesting concept for me because I always wanted to do law, and you know, I get to learn the law, and I get to help out my peers as well. So.
And who approached you, Maury?
It was my former principal.
And why do you think he approached you?
Because I'm seen as like. Kids look up to me in the school, not to sound like cocky or anything. So I guess she figured, like, if I was behind something like this, then they could actually do something.
Oh, that's great. And were you trained? Did you get
yes,
training?
Yes, we were. For most of my junior year, well, no, actually, for the fall semester of my junior year, we were trained.
And what was that training like? What did they train you to do?
It was mostly like we were trained in legal terms, and we did mock trials. To get us to give us a feel of what the actual court would feel like.
So, have you sat in judgment of one of your fellow students?
Yes, many times.
Many times. And what are the kinds of, I guess, infractions that would bring someone before your court?
We have scrunchies being pulled out of girls' hairs, walking out of class, cafeteria, like. Just disruptions in the cafeteria, disruptions in class, skipping class, stuff like that.
And what's the response if someone is pulling a scrunchie out of someone's hair? What did that person have to do in response?
It varies. I can't even remember what we gave the girl, but it was she had to apologize, of course, mm-hmm. because that's just a no-no. But. Mm-hmm. I think we gave her community service as well, and she had to apologize to someone else.
We were talking about this before you came on, Maury, but it seems like apologizing or a letter of apology, that seems like an important thing to do. Have you found that from your experience?
Yes, because sometimes the student doesn't really understand what they did wrong until they write the letter, and then they're like, gee. I messed up.
Yeah. Is it hard to sit in judgment of your fellow students and maybe even some of your friends?
Well, I'm fortunate enough. All my friends are in youth court with me.
that helps, right?
Yeah. it's not really difficult because, when you do youth court, you're trained to, take yourself away. Mm-hmm. And if one of my friends was, to be on trial or in the court, I would just take myself away from the case.
You'd recuse yourself in
yeah.
a way. Do you think it's helped your school?
Yeah, I think it has, actually. Last year, we'd see a difference, less kids were getting suspended mm-hmm. for, the minor things. And it gave the school a better reputation as well.
And you said you're interested in the law?
Yeah, I'm interested in criminal justice.
Are you interested in being a lawyer?
I've thought about it. It's an idea I've toyed with.
Well, you're still in high school, so you have time to make that decision. But do you feel like being on the court has helped you grow up, be a more mature person?
I do. Also, with the summer, we had a internship program, and that really helped me.
Where was the internship?
At the courthouse in Media.
Oh, wow. So you got to see other court systems?
Yeah, and we got to shadow the judges and sit in on cases and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, Maury, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on your work as well, and good luck.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And that's Maury Hitchcock. He's a senior at the Science and Discovery High School of the Chester Upland School District and one of a number of students in Chester who have been serving on youth court. And I have to say, Greg, you gave a thumbs up. I know you know Maury, yes?
Well, sure. I mean, these are my kids. I mean, I'm really proud of them. And I think as difficult as things are in Chester, the fact that we've had the modest success that we've had indicates the potential for youth courts far beyond the city of Chester.
And one of the other things that you've said, Greg, is that, and this is probably true in certain communities, is that there can be, you know, if you have problems in school, you might have problems once you get out of school, and then you could end up in the criminal justice system. Do you see this as intervening in effective ways?
Well, that really is the big idea here is it's going to keep kids from being put into the criminal justice system. That's really what we're trying to do. Some research that I think Jeff's probably involved in New York, there's 6 or 7 youth courts that are being developed at New York's in, I don't know if they're all in Manhattan or not, but they're being developed now. They're doing research, and we're doing research as well. Research for Action is a Philadelphia-based educational research organization that is beginning to do research on what happens to the kids right. after they're in the youth court, and also what happens to the kids who run the youth courts.
And to you, Jeff, just to follow up on that, would you say one of the goals is to try to keep kids out of if not the juvenile justice system, the criminal system, criminal justice system?
Absolutely. It's the overall goal is to facilitate the process that takes an unruly, uncertain sort of adolescent and turn them into an adult who has a job and is part of the community. And that's a long, sometimes meandering process for all of us. And what youth court does is help to make it clear to a young person that the law is not them, it's us. Mm. And when you participate in the process and you're actually representing the community in either as a juror or a judge or the participant themselves who comes in and experiences that and experiences a fair, transparent process, it helps them understand that the legal system is there for all of us and it is us. And it helps to diminish that natural teenage tendency to resent authority. So when you see a police officer on the street, you don't think that's them. You start to think of them as us.
Well, that's interesting. Greg, we're about a minute or so before our second break, and then we will get to our callers here. But do school administrations have to be convinced on this? As you know, schools are dealing with many issues. They have many pressures on them. Do they see this as just one more pressure or something to help alleviate some of the problems in schools?
Well, let me say that I think without the support of the administration, it's very difficult to run an efficient youth court because they have a disciplinary system that's in place. And if you're going to get a buy-in to have them send cases to you, they have to trust you and they have to believe in the model. And I don't think that's always easy to do because
no.
a lot of people really still have the children should be seen and not heard philosophy. If you have that philosophy, youth court isn't attractive to you. If you believe that kids are soon going to be citizens and we want them to be good, then youth court has a real appeal to us.
Because it empowers kids in
a certain
kind of
way. That's what it is. It's all about empowerment. And active citizen participation is really a lot of this is about civic engagement, of giving kids something real to deal with and seeing where that can take them.
Well, let's take that short break and we'll get back to our conversation. And I do want to get some callers in as well. And we are talking about youth courts, how they work, where they're applied. Some of them are in schools. Some of them are in courts and some of them in community centers. And we're talking with Greg Voltz. He's been working with students in the Chester County Public School System just outside of Philadelphia. Jeffrey Butts has been doing research on programs to address at-risk youth. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Bristol Riverside Theater supports WHYY and presents My Mother's Italian, My Father's Jewish, and I'm in Therapy, November 2nd through 6th. Written and performed by Steve Solomon, this one-man play is based on Solomon's life growing up in a family noted for its bi-ethnic diversity and dysfunctional behavior. Meet Uncle Willie, stuttering Cousin Bob, demented Cousin Kenny, and Steve's new therapist, Cousin Sal. My Mother's Italian, My Father's Jewish, and I'm in Therapy, November 2nd through 6th. 215-785-0100 or brtstage.org.
On the next Fresh Air, a conversation with David Carr, who writes a column for the New York Times about old media and new media.
He says we may be entering a golden age of journalism.
I look at my backpack. It contains more sort of journalistic firepower than the entire newsroom that I walked into 30, 40 years ago.
Join us
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Cancers of the throat and neck in men on the rise, caused by the same virus that causes cervical cancer in women. We'll talk treatment and prevention. Also, the music in Haruki Murakami's latest novel. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about youth court. Some of these courts are in schools for disciplinary problems, and some are in the juvenile justice system to deal with first-time nonviolent offenders. And we're talking with Jeffrey Butts and Greg Voltz, and we have a full bank of calls here. Let me get, looks like Winnie from Burlington County to join our conversation. And Winnie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to call and give my opinion of the youth court. I was involved in youth court about 19 years ago in Columbia, South Carolina, and to this day it's had a tremendous impact on my life. Right now I'm actually studying for the LSAT. Most of the students who originally joined with me are in their first year of law school or in the military, and the rest are in college. So it was for the first group that entered with our program, it was a precursor for success, I would say, in our small group that we had.
Oh, that's great, Winnie. And this was about 20 years ago? You were in high school?
No, actually about nine or 10 years ago.
9 or 10 years ago. And in South Carolina. So was it in the school system then?
Actually, we did it with the city of Columbia. So most schools in the districts went through one centralized youth court system, but it was based out of one school. Most of the juries, the defense attorneys, and the other titles that we received came out of one school. But we would travel to the courthouse and handle cases for the entire city of Columbia.
Oh, wow. Well, let me give our guest, thanks for calling in, Winnie. Let me give our guests, I'll start with you, Greg Voltz, any response to what Winnie just told us?
Well, just that another benefit of youth court is that a lot of the students who are involved have either were interested in the law or develop an interest in the law. And one thing I want to say about research real quickly, because I think it's really important, it's hard to get money to do research right now, but there's a guy who was at Swarthmore College, but now he's at the University of Virginia, and he has both a law degree and he has a doctorate in anthropology. He wants to do research on this topic. What impact does youth court participation have on your attitude towards the legal and judicial system? And I think that's a fabulous idea, and I hope we're able to do that. He wants to do the research up here in the Philadelphia region.
Well, that's interesting. Jeffrey Butts, you want to weigh in on that at all?
There's a lot of work to be done. I think when you visit youth courts, especially, as I said before, when you see a good one, you get very enthusiastic and you see all the possibilities, not just for the people in that room, but for the youth culture in general. And I'll give you one quick anecdote, which is the program in Anchorage that I like so much. They had become so developed, and so many young people were involved from high schools all over the city, that Youth Bar Association became a powerful social network. And when kids in Anchorage were getting stopped by the police for skateboarding, especially in the summer when it's light all night long, they'd be out skateboarding until 10 or 11 at night. And they decided they wanted a skateboard park, and the Youth Bar Association led the way to actually propose that to the city council, and they developed the official proposal and got it funded. And that's rural youth engagement and youth empowerment, and it was the Youth Bar Association that helped organize the kids to be able to do that.
That's great. Winnie, thanks for the call. Let me see. It looks like we have Mr. Daniels from Trenton. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Great. I wanted to know, what is the minimum age or grade that you found it to be effective to implement the youth court?
And can I ask you why you asked that? I'm curious as well, but Mr. Daniels, why do you want to know that? I'm curious.
I'm a father of a child who's in pre-K, and my child is very intelligent, but she's been through three different teachers, and I want to find a way to resolve it before it becomes a problem. And if we're able to resolve it before she gets into, say, elementary school, then it won't be something that will continue with her, you know, from elementary through high school and possibly even beyond. And I like the idea, and I've actually participated in more, I guess, peer mentoring and peer groups where, you know, your peers judged what you did, but it wasn't necessarily like a youth court.
Court.
Well, so that's my reasoning.
I hear you. Let me see what Greg Volz has to say. How young can a student be?
Well, Pima, Arizona, which is Tucson, they've been running a middle school youth court for about 15 years. We actually looked at them very seriously. We like their model. I don't know that I'm aware of any youth courts that have functioned K-5, but I do know that the first youth court case that a bunch of eighth graders held in Chester, because we did an eighth grade youth court last year at one of the elementary schools, the student who came before them was a fourth grader. So but based on that, you cannot conclude that it's a model that makes sense. Jeff might want to speak to that.
Yeah, Jeff, what do you think? Do we have Jeff? Oh, I think we lost him. All right, we'll try to get him.
I think the jury is still out on how young people can do this, but I can tell you that until some of the staff cutbacks occurred this year, I was prepared to do a first grade, not a youth court, but start talking about rules, consequences, and values with a bunch of first graders, because I think we need to start at least at that point.
Fair enough. And again, that's Greg Volz, and we are talking about teen courts or youth courts today on Radio Times. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Just so our listeners understand, then the various and is punishment? That's probably not the right word.
We
to
don't use.
Use
that word.
Yeah, what word do you use?
Disposition.
Disposition.
The disposition. The jury discerns the facts of the case and then deliberates and comes up with a disposition of what you have to do.
And we're talking about everything from community service.
Yes.
An apology, an essay.
Mandatory jury duty.
Mandatory jury.
Where they learn how to run a youth court themselves and participate and get to see it from the other side, which we think is a very helpful thing.
Okay, fair enough. And Jeffrey Busta, we have you back?
Yes, I'm in a hotel room in California on a cordless phone, and that could be part of the problem.
I think it might be part of the problem, but that's okay. We're happy to have you back. Let me get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Jeffrey, I don't want to oversell youth courts and to think that they're going to solve all the problems that young people can deal with, but our caller wanted to know about using youth courts for younger kids. Have you looked at that?
Younger, I'm assuming you mean 11, 12-year-olds?
Yeah, or maybe even younger. I don't know.
Yeah, there's definitely a point at which it becomes inappropriate. I have been in youth courts where I saw 12 and 13-year-olds, and depending on their characteristics and what the behavior was and how the courtroom is run, it might be okay, but I think that's something you need to really look at and think about on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. Let me get, looks like Elizabeth from Ocean City to join us on Radio Times. And Elizabeth, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
I'm a first-time caller. I have enjoyed all your topics.
Well, thank you so much.
For a couple weeks now.
Great. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
My concerns concerning this approach, and I do have a couple questions, a couple statements. Have you thought of using a theatrical approach with this type of model rather than using, quote-unquote, disposition student who has done something wrong? Couldn't you use a more theatrical approach where you have a student acting out a bad disposition? I'm concerned about exploiting the disposition of a student. We're talking about a young person here,
right?
Whether they're in junior high or high school. And also,
well,
let me just
stop you there. When you say, I mean, if a student is told to either have a written apology or to apologize to somebody or some community service, do you think that's exploitative?
I think the model and the approach is exploiting the student. I feel that. The reprimand, the ridicule, whatever level that is placed on, whether it's minimal, writing an essay, or whether it's maximum, should be suspended.
Well, let me take your point, because I'm not sure you're understanding what it is we're talking about, because I don't hear either of our guests talking about ridicule or even reprimand. We're talking about a very different way of holding young people accountable for their decisions. Greg, do you want to weigh
right.
in on that?
Right. The alternative for these kids is oftentimes suspension right. or worse. So instead of something really bad happening to them personally, the school may decide it's good for the school, but the kid's out of class and not getting an education. Mm-hmm. We're suggesting that having peers determine a reasonable and reflective way for a student to understand what they've done and to reform their behavior is preferential mm-hmm. to that. And I'm not sure I do think that there is an aspect of peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it.
Right.
That we've had kids who would not come. They decided to take the suspension instead of going before the youth court. And I frankly think that shows the power of this process.
Jeff, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I think there's a concern always in programs like this for quality. And to the extent that the program is poorly managed and not properly designed, you could end up in a situation where the young people are left to sort of vent their mm-hmm. Ambitions to be on Law and Order. And I've seen this before where without proper training and supervision, the young people in the court, the judges, the attorneys, can get a little carried away. I don't think it's exploiting either the youth participant or the youth who work in the court as the court, as long as it's well designed and those impulses are kept in check, and that's not hard to do. And to see a courtroom of young people, though, rise to the occasion and represent their community and take the whole process seriously, I think has a profound effect on the participant, far from exploiting them.
But I'm wondering, and did we lose you, Jeffrey? Are you still there? Oh, I think we lost him. Okay, I think we're going to have to say goodbye to Jeffrey Butts, and he is the director of the Research and Evaluation Center at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice at the City University of New York. Greg Volz is going to stay with us for the rest of the hour, and we'll be taking more calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I think our caller Elizabeth was also raising questions, and perhaps. I think there's a legitimate question about the kind of adult supervision to make sure that these kids don't have the law, in a sense, go to their head or take the wrong lessons from, you know, some of the court shows that they see on TV.
Yeah. Actually, that's a great entree to something that I've been wanting to say, and that's that Pennsylvania is the largest state in the United States that doesn't have very many youth courts. Hmm. New York's got over 100. Illinois's got 130. Florida's got about 60, et cetera. Pennsylvania has got about 15. And we've got an opportunity to learn from all the other states and create the best youth court system in the United States. And I think that's what Pennsylvania kids deserve.
Mm. Within a school, and you work within a school, I mean, there is the school disciplinary program, whatever that is, and then you've got the youth courts, and you referenced this earlier. There has to be some kind of coordination or consistency, it seems to me, between those two systems, yes?
Absolutely. I mean, that's probably a major issue that needs to be thought about is even if, as a matter of public policy, you decide you want youth courts, how do you then work them through the superintendent, the principal, the teacher, the climate control manager, et cetera. You need a buy-in that this idea makes sense.
Let me get Gus from Florida to join us on Radio Times. And Gus, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. First of all, I want to thank you for taking on this issue. Anytime people are talking about juvenile justice is a good thing, I think. As a former legislator in Florida who chaired the Criminal Justice Appropriations Committee and looked at my background as juvenile justice, mm-hmm. and what I refer to as criminalization of adolescence, teen court or youth court is a phenomenal idea. It's a great diversion program. I always found that when kids are put in an empowerment position where they're judging other kids on their actions, sometimes they even become a little tougher than adults. But kids, you know what? They listen to other kids, and the effectiveness and the recidivism rates throughout Florida have dropped as teen courts have expanded throughout the major counties. So it's one more tool in the tool chest, and I think it's just a great idea, and I look forward to more programs like this to keep kids out of the deep end system.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, Gus. Thank you so much. Let me get one more caller in before we have to end this hour. It looks like we have Lillian from Horsham. And Lillian, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I just wanted to say, talking about how young children should be brought into this. I was in first grade when I was arrested for crossing, taking a shortcut home over Farmer's Field. And it was a very traumatic experience for me to go through going to the court where these big eighth graders were like adults to me, sent passed judgment on me.
Oh, wow. And this was back in the 1930s, Lillian?
Pardon me?
This was back in the 1930s?
In the 1930s, yes, in elementary school. We had this safety patrol, and they were like police. They wore these belts, like a strap over their shoulder and around their waist, and they were like scary people to us.
I bet. And what was your quote-unquote punishment, Lillian?
I had to write, "I will not cross Kramer's Field," 200 times, and I couldn't even write at the time. I think it was the beginning of first grade. So I had an older sister who wrote it for me.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, that was a long time ago, but clearly something that you still think about.
Right.
Well,
I say I'm 82 years old, and I still remember that traumatic experience of going to court with all these people, and here I am.
And here you are. Well, I appreciate that call to Radio Times. And, Greg, I don't know if we want to recreate what happened to Lillian or not. Any final thoughts from you?
No, I mean, I think Jeff was pretty balanced. Are you going to have quality youth courts or just youth courts? That's a big right. issue. And if you have quality youth courts, I think the jury's in. It's a good idea. It makes a lot of sense. It's not the solution to everything wrong with juvenile justice or with school discipline, but it's a powerful tool. But the question is, are we going to take advantage of what we know around the country and build the best youth courts possible here in Pennsylvania?
And that's Greg Volz. He is a public interest lawyer, and he's also a Stone Lee Center Foundation fellow working with teenagers, students in Chester, Pennsylvania, in the school system there on their youth courts. And he is, as you can tell, working to develop a movement across the state of Pennsylvania for youth courts. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show. It's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.